and welcome to episode 100 of season 11 of Movie Rob Bennett, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off the week is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show.
Hey, not only is it episode 100, but it's Friday. We got to celebrate. We got to hang out together this weekend.
All right, sounds good. All right. Yeah, I will invite you for Shabbat.
Oh, does that mean I have to stay inside all day?
No, you're allowed to go outside.
We're allowed to go outside? Okay.
Of course you are.
Just can't turn anything on.
No, whatever. We're not going to go there.
How would I live without my cell phone for 25 hours, Rob? I mean, come on.
I think you could do it. If Charlie Kirk could do it, you could do it.
My wife says, here's the thing. She got so mad because I am on my phone so much that now I'm getting in trouble because I'm trying to be conscious about it. So to make sure I don't go look at it, I start to put it down and walk away. And invariably, that's when she texts me something. She's like, why didn't you respond? I'm like, I didn't have my phone. She's like, what do you mean you didn't have your phone? You always have your phone. Can't win for losing.
Oh, that's the way it is. We're all familiar with those type of situations.
It's like getting the text just as you left the grocery store. Hey, one more thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you have to decide, do I go back or do mm-hmm. Or do I tell the truth that I just left the grocery store? Right.
Or I'm in line. I don't want to give up my line. And I say, oh, I just got done paying.
Exactly. Very true. Very true.
No, I better not listen to this.
All right. So episode 100 begins with Malarkey finishing to introduce the men and ends with the men learning the price of potatoes. So we left things off yesterday with learning about Jones and Webster, and also learning about the fact that there is going to be a patrol that's going to be happening mm-hmm. shortly. You know, and the men are all trying to figure out, or the commanders are all trying to figure out how they're going to do this. And, you know, both Jones and Webster are sort of flies on the wall that have a little more information mm-hmm. than everyone else has. And we're going to wait and see what they do with that information.
It's this element of the military captured perfectly. Everyone's always trying to play rumor mill. What did you hear? What do you know? Who's being selected? What's going to happen to so-and-so? I mean, it's not Gossip Girls, but it might as well be. I mean, so much of this is dead on, trying to feed, you know, pump people for information. I mean, what we're seeing here, I'm used to seeing everywhere, which is ironic because my field specialty when I was in the Navy was intelligence. And so we were schooled literally every day. If you do what they're doing here and let something loose, you're going to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. You're going to prison, big boy prison. And so I have learned to do the exact opposite of what these guys are doing. But this is what I see. I've seen this my whole life around military people.
Okay, but it also goes for, like, what information are they trying to glean here? You know, that type of thing. You know, that I don't think
they always want to know.
Right, I don't think the information that they're trying to get right now, if you were in that situation and you gave them that situation, I don't know if that means going to Leavenworth because you've now told them who's going on the patrol. You know.
Yeah, but I'm so – again, I've been trained so hard to not release anything right. that I'll literally compartmentalize everything rather than risk until somebody says it's okay to disclose.
Right, okay, I completely understand. Yeah.
Now, on the flip side, what we're going to see is it's not the lieutenant that discloses. The lieutenant, I think, made his mistake last episode and realized, okay, I shared something that turned out to be not correct. I'm trying to buddy up. I'm not going to share.
That's right.
But they go after Webster
right. for that. So Malarkey continues to tell Jones where everyone is. He goes, well, some are sleeping downstairs, and the rest are right here. And then Jones says to him, Sergeant, a patrol is being planned for tonight, 100 hours, across the river. Regiment wants POWs for interrogation. What's the situation? And, you know, the two of them start talking, and then, you know, Liebgott cozies up to Webb and goes, "Hey, Webb, what? Come here. I want to talk to you for a second. Come here. Why? You want some coffee?" No. And then he goes, 15. 15 what? Louis since D-Day. So that's pretty interesting that they're talking about the fact that this is their 15th lieutenant in the last year. You know, that tells us a lot. And it also tells us that, you know, they haven't told us, they haven't shown us everything that's been happening to the Easy Company over the last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you've mentioned from both the book and across this entire season, I mean, there's what, over 150 folks that are part of this company. We're obviously not seeing, we're not seeing all the different platoons. We're not seeing all of the different subgroups within the overall company. Each one of those has a lieutenant. So it's, you know, it's not just what we're seeing. But yeah, I think you're right. I think we've probably gone through our share, obviously, of lieutenants across all of these.
The question here is, and I don't know the answer, is Liebgott referring to throughout Easy, or is he talking just in second platoon? You know, I'm hoping he's talking about all of Easy.
It's got to be all of Easy.
I really hope so.
Because otherwise you wouldn't be able to get a lieutenant assigned. You're like, hey, it's like being the defense against the dark arts teacher at Hogsworth. You're always guaranteed to die.
Or something's guaranteed to happen to you. You know,
yeah. You won't last more than a year.
Well, that way. You know, they need to, you know, change the characters in every book. So there you go.
Right. But no, I it's a nice little nugget to let us know that these lieutenants have been coming like a dime a dozen, where these guys have been through the ringer, you know, mostly intact. Or I shouldn't say intact, but they've right. been through it since D-Day.
That's true. And again, we can tell what he's trying to get out of him here.
Mm-hmm.
And then Malarkey, we're back with Malarkey, and Malarkey goes, "Any mortars?" And he goes, 60's out back. And we hear Liebgott say, "Is this kid out of high school yet?" And then Webster goes, "He's out of West Point." Mm. West Point? Hey, isn't that where Ike went? Yeah, he actually graduated with his son. See, that's information that we didn't know. He didn't tell us that, did he? I don't think so.
No, we didn't hear that in the dialogue, but we got yesterday's episode when Dixon knows that this guy was coming from West Point. There probably was some right. scuttle about him. We just have to kind of assume that.
And then he goes, "So what do you know about this patrol thing?" Nothing. Oh, come on, Webb. You gotta know something. I don't. It was bullshit. You were there, right? At the CP. This is a prisoner snatch, right? And he goes, "Hey, Chuck, listen to this. Come on, Webster, spill it." And Webster isn't sure, but you know, it goes along with what we were talking about yesterday, that Webster is trying to curry some favor with the men. You know, he feels like an outsider, and he doesn't want to feel like an outsider. So he's like, "All right, I'll give him a little bit of information. Captain Spears is 15 men. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Jones wants to be one of them. I say let the kid go. He could use the experience. Probably could find 14 replacements to help him out."
And I love how they make a point of saying, "Not us. We'll find if some people that are brand new. They
can right.
let all the
we
newbies
don't
go. Go.
We don't need to go. We'll just let mm-hmm. Jones take whoever he wants." Yeah, I like the fact that whenever they show Webster, we see that he has a pistol strapped in front of in front of his shirt, which is really strange because, you know, it's obviously not regulation. And where did he get the pistol? Because it doesn't look like it's a German pistol. And, you know, usually it's the officers who, you know, who are given pistols. You don't have someone like Webster who's he's found a pistol somehow. You know, it's not like he's, you know, or actually maybe it's similar to what happened with Talbert. You know, Talbert in the very first episode got a package from the chief of police, you know, from Kokomo, who sent him a gun to use. So maybe that's how Webster got it. But it's just very strange the way that it's strapped on him like that.
I think the way it looks like from the hilt, it looks like it's a standard 1911 mm-hmm. style 45 caliber, like you said, technically an officer's pistol. Like this would be your your standard single action semi-automatic 45. I mean, you're right. I mean, this would technically be an NCO or an officer, but I guess at some point, nobody's going to stop you from being more armed.
That's true. Also.
When you're going into combat.
A very good point. Again, the...
And I would imagine having been in close quarters, because you know what I loved about what we saw both with Saving Private Ryan and here, all the engagements weren't just in open fields or around trees. There were a lot of close quarters and hallways and small corridors and stairwells. You have a lot better chance swinging a pistol around and getting at it in the front of your shirt if you had to pull fast versus a rifle.
No, I just find it interesting that nobody makes a comment about it, because he's the only guy that you see that has a pistol strapped on him like that.
And notice he didn't have it until now. He didn't have it earlier in the series. He had it when he came back from the hospital. And so, yeah, this is definitely a 1911 style 45 cal, probably single wides. I don't know how many. I'd have to look up how many, but probably 10. 9 or 10 rounds that it would carry. But again, the 45 was picked because of its stopping power at close range. And initially, ironically, they developed the 45 for the cavalry to be able to, if your horse went down and you had to put your horse out of its misery, it was powerful enough to be able to penetrate the skull of the horse. The smaller caliber guns, you couldn't euthanize your horse. So the 45 was sort of like that caliber for that reason.
Yeah, these guys never going to have that problem. I mean, we do see horses, you know, so there are, we saw horses.
No, I'm not saying that's why they carry it now.
In part 9, but no horses here. No horses in part 8.
I mean, Patton uses his 45 to take care of a couple of mules that were blocking the, a group of tanks, but you know, that's a different movie.
And then we're back with Jones and Malarkey, and Jones says, I take it this was already an outpost when you arrived. And he goes, well, there were some doggies from the 79th Infantry, but they left in a hurry. What's the report on enemy activity? Expect some flares, a few mortars at night. Scattered 88s. Snipers during the day. Yeah, we dodged some mortars on our way in. And he goes, they also got some sort of railroad gun back there. And, you know, they do a nice job of giving us, you know, a view of what these guys can see, you know, through the window here, which I wouldn't necessarily stand in front of a window like that if you know that they're, you know, taking pot shots.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing that I've watched, well, thankfully for two reasons. One, it's fairly grimed over. You can barely see through it, but that's also good for production. You don't have to worry about what you have to hide through the window. But I do find it interesting how this series reminds us again that sometimes the enemy was just a few hundred feet to a few hundred yards away, and they were both looking at each other, waiting for when it was time to move or biding their time to see if somebody else made the first move.
And again, it is great.
I mean, because again, growing up watching these big, massive battles on like the older Hollywood movies, you know, you think of it across big giant fields and across, you know, plains. You forget that a lot of times it may have been just a few hundred feet apart where people were just kind of holding their own, whether it was foxholes or buildings.
Right. Now, what I find really cool, the way that they do this is that, you know, later in this part, we're, you know, they're going at 1 o'clock in the morning to go across the river to go, you know, try and get these prisoners. But they're giving us a shot of what it looks like
in daytime.
Daylight through a grimy window, you know, that type of thing. But it also shows us the distance. It's not that far. It's not as far as you might think.
No, it's just literally across the river.
That's right.
Like, however wide at this point, and I didn't look up the town, but however wide the river is from one side to the other, that's as far apart as the enemy is.
That's right. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't take long by rowboat or rubber boat.
Well, you know, they will have ropes to help them across also, you know, so, you know, to move things a little further, a little faster. And then Malarkey says, you know, they also got some sort of railroad gun back there. Shells about the size of a deuce and a half. Sounds like a freight train when one comes over. But they haven't made any attempts to cross the river? Nope. They have roofs over their heads, sir. Just like us. I don't think anybody wants to do anything stupid at this point. right?
I love that line. I think that, once again, it's a line that tells you the attitude of so many of these guys. They're content at this point. Why risk doing anything at this point? We've got finally some cover, some warmth. Let's just stay here. I totally get it.
Yeah, and also it's great that they assume that that's what the enemy wants to do also.
Mm-hmm. Well, simply because they haven't made a move. The Americans haven't made a move. They're kind of they're content to stay where they are at the moment.
Yes, completely. And then we're back with Webster and Liebgott, and the other guys are all sitting around. You got Babe there, and you got Ramirez there. There's a few of them that are there. And he goes, "Why are you holding out on me? I know you know." And he goes, "Come on, just give us the names, Webb. Who?" And he goes, "All right, there are three men here in this room that they think should be on the patrol. Who? Well, if I tell you, you can't let on that you know. Your secret's safe, Webb. Who is it?" And he goes, "All right, Heffron." And Babe goes, "All right." "McClung." And then he turns to Ramirez and goes, "And you." So Ramirez is friend of the show, Rene Moreno, who I talked to a few months ago. And mm-hmm. So it's great seeing him and seeing him being pointed out. And Levi goes, "You want any other guys from any other platoon?" No, I don't know. Not that I know of. Look, that's all I know. I'm sorry." And then the shot changes, and we're back with Malarkey and Jones. And he goes, "So it's McClung, mm-hmm. Heffron, and Ramirez." He goes, "I'll tell them."
Yeah.
And I just need you to point, and Malarkey isn't playing the game.
What?
Yeah.
You know, again, we talked a little bit about wanting different endings. I so want Webster to just say, "Honestly, guys, I know this is a mission and that's it. They weren't going to share personnel with me. They'll make a decision when they do." Or they were talking about you three, but they haven't made up their minds yet. There's nothing that gave anybody an equivocation out. Webster kind of locks himself in as if this is a done deal, which it kind of is. But why didn't he give himself the out, the plausible deniability, if you will, rather than lock himself in with intel?
Well, again, it goes back to the point that we've mentioned numerous times about Webster. He's trying to incur favor with these guys. So, you know, they're asking me to divulge a little secret a few minutes before they're going to find out. So why not?
I guess.
You know, that type of thing. Let's try and make friends. You know, that type of thing.
I guess. And I guess he maybe I should think of it this way. He was calculating in his head, if I don't tell them and they found out that I had heard their names, they'll be mad that I didn't disclose.
Correct. It definitely works both ways with that.
Yeah.
And I love the way that Jones wants to be, you know, wants to do the formality here. He wants to be the one to tell them and, you know, just tell me who they are, which is funny because if you're standing in a room with a group of people, you don't necessarily need to know who is who at this point. You can basically just say the names and have them stand up or whatever it is.
Right.
You know, obviously he wants to be more personable if possible, but. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work.
Also, yeah. Probably shows a little bit of the naivete. In his mind, he thinks, if I'm pointing to the guys, it's like, oh, you already know who we are. That's impressive. The flip side is these guys don't want to be picked. So you're not going to impress.
That's right. That's right. Don't pick me.
Exactly. So once again, the writing showing the ambition, the exuberance of somebody who's fresh and new and wanting to prove themselves. I'm not saying he's wrong. It'd be great to say, I kind of already knew. I knew the team. I studied your records ahead of time or whatever. So I feel like I was learning you guys. That'd be impressive. But the last thing these guys wanted to be picked. So it's so funny how he's doing it from his perspective. He thinks is a good thing to build morale. And the last thing they want is to be picked, which is going to be bad.
Exactly. And Malarkey basically just decides he's just going to break the news.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "Listen up. You got some bad news, guys. There's a patrol set for tonight. And so far, Spears wants McClung." And Liebgott goes, "Yeah, we know. Yeah, we just f-ing heard." Mm. And then Ramirez goes, "Webster just told us." So, you know, Webster now definitely feels like an idiot because, you know, he Yeah,
remember,
spilled the beans,
he said,
and he's now in
yeah,
trouble
he's like,
for
your secret's safe with me, and then just closes it.
Yeah, within
Within
seconds. We're
seconds,
not
yeah.
even talking about it.
Oh, but again, it feels, it's another one of those quick moments that Webster still is on the outs. They're not, he's not being brought back into the fold like he once was.
But he's trying to get back in. That's part of the
Right. He
whole thing.
wants desperately to get back in, just like Jones wants desperately to be involved. And these guys don't want to have anything really at this point to do with either of them.
And it makes sense, and the work that Eric Bork did here is just great by writing this, the way that he wrote this up.
Yeah.
It really makes us feel the differences between these guys. And one of the things I love is when Malarkey comes to tell them, he takes his hat off, sort of like out of respect for them, but also, maybe it's the idea that you're not supposed to wear a hat indoors. I don't know.
Well,
Even though he's been wearing a hat indoors.
it's the gesture we see when someone's about to deliver bad news.
Right. A hat in hand.
Yes.
That's
exactly.
All right. And then the phone rings and Malarkey picks it up and goes, "Easy White. Yeah. Okay. All right. Out." He goes, "The PX Racing just came in, including winter shoe packs. Beautiful. Yeah. Finally, right. Good of them now that we're in a nice warm house." Malarkey goes, "Also, we got showers." So these guys are happy about that too. And then we hear explosions.
Well, before that, one of the things that they gave the actor to do, which I thought was a nice little touch, is, you know, there's no electricity. There's a little hand crank generator to keep the battery pack charged. And because however long that phone call was, just to make sure it stays charged for the next time they need to call, he turns the
He
crank
needs to,
to charge it back up, which I thought was a nice little touch.
I like that too.
I
And
actually,
I also like that as he's cranking it, we see that Webster is basically kicking himself, for the fact that he just gave them this information, and now everyone hates him, that type of thing.
Yeah. It's, again, so many things happening simultaneously, and yet none of this ever feels forced. I never feel like, here's where we're going to explain why the lieutenant thinks this is a good idea. It just flows.
That's right. And then we hear a mortar shell coming, and everyone starts running, and they some of them even put on their helmets, which we've talked about numerous times, the fact that there are far too many times that these guys are not wearing helmets in order for us to know who they are. Not because that's what their characters really would do.
Right. But I also get it if they were not wearing their helmet indoors. But yeah, for the film, for the series, you got to be able to differentiate the actors so they have to take a little bit of liberty.
Exactly.
This one actually made sense. You hear an incoming, you got seconds to get the. It's too. If your helmet's across the room, it doesn't matter. You're just going.
That's right. I'm a little familiar. A little familiar.
Yes, I'm sure you are. What I love. Well, I'll wait till you get to when they hit dive to the basement. But I would just say, camera wise, the frenetic moment of them all diving down the stairs. I like this. It's like we're in with the men running down the stairs.
And again, these guys just take off. They all know where they need to go. Some of them. There's even, I think, one guy that doesn't even grab his gun. So one guy we see one of the guys grab his gun, and another one doesn't. And they just, they just want to get to the basement as quickly as possible. All right, let's move. Clear it out. God, move, move. Incoming. Come on, come on, come on. Go. Stay down. Stay low. Stay low. And then they see that the building across the way gets hit. But as they're running down the stairs, we see a lot of debris coming around them, and they're all in this basement, and they just start laughing, and they realize I think the laughter is them trying to deal with the fact that this is the situation they're in right now. We're finally indoors, but we're still not safe. It doesn't make a difference.
Well, it's a great, again, I keep using this term, dichotomy, because as they're laughing and the camera literally low to the ground with all of us pulls up over the ledge of the table, the lieutenant can't figure out why this is funny. you know, and right. Webster doesn't know why this is funny. It's because these guys are like, hey, dodged our building. We just kind of ran down, but that's cool. You know, that was fun. We all ran down the stairs and just a little bit of debris. Look at the dust in your hair. Like, that's all you can do. Like, what are you going to do? You can't do anything else. Webster feels like, holy crap, we could have died. And same thing with Jones.
That's right.
It's great. I mean, even in the two shot where they're both looking toward camera, Webster's like, what the heck? These guys are laughing. And the guy behind him smiling like he's posing for a picture. It's, again, I think this makes sense.
This is their life right now.
Right. Yeah. These guys, after what they went through in Bastogne and Foy, a shell now and then shaking the plaster, I mean, okay, we'll just deal with it. These other two guys, right. One's never seen combat. The other one's been 4 months.
Because what Webster was going through in the hospital is very different than what these guys have been dealing with.
Yeah.
And then the shot changes and these guys are all outside. Obviously, everyone is all wearing their helmets at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear a gunshot and Jones is the only one to really flinch out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear someone scream from afar. Somebody's been hit.
You know what? I want to go back to that shot of the scrunch down, because Colin Hanks is actually pretty tall. And because he's skinny and lanky, he almost looks like the tallest person in the room. When he scrunches down, he literally is the shortest person in the frame.
Right.
Like, and then when he finally stands back up, he gains his regular height. But you see that it's a visual cue. He went further down than anybody, even though he's the tallest person in that four-person shot. It was just kind of wild to just see him eventually creep, see how far down he had scrunched in a reflex to something that he's not used to.
Right. Because, again, he's more scared than everyone else.
Right.
You know, because he's the one who's not familiar at all with the way that this stuff works. And so it's great also showing the other guys not really flinching. They're moving a little bit, but they're not completely caught off guard by it. It's not as if they're saying to themselves, wow, I never would have expected this. You know, this is what these guys know that they will be expecting. But, you know, Jones doesn't, I mean, even Webster doesn't flinch from it, which is a nice way to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Someone goes, what happened? They go, casualty. Who is it? Bill Kane. He goes, I just left him. I was on my way back. And at this point, we get the narration from Webster. And he goes, in war, soldiers sometimes die in the fever pitch of a firefight or by artillery when they're huddled in a foxhole. Bill Kane, a Tacoma man, was killed because he was carrying a sack of potatoes from one building into another, in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was dead before Doc Rowe even heard the call Doc Rowe for a medic. At this point, you know, we just see the body on the ground, and you know, it's another poignant moment where it shows that you know, the type of more or less crap that happens to these guys, you know, over the course of this war. It's not, you know, it's like Hubler. You know, sometimes people, I guess die in ways that you wouldn't have expected. You know, not necessarily in the middle of the heat of battle or anything like that. Just, you know, as Webster says, wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
You know, just like John McClane.
You know, what's interesting, just you were talking in the shot earlier about how Webster's got this 45. There's an unnamed extra that's sort of coming into the scene from the far, our left side. A sergeant who's got a very similar strap and weapon in front of him as well. He's got the same 45 over his shoulder.
So maybe it's
I think these guys, as they've come across them, they've learned to just arm themselves with extra. Especially if they've been asked to go maybe on patrol in small quarter combat. I'd have to read up on it, but you know, it's obviously another NCO here with a 45 on a front shoulder.
Isn't that malarkey?
No. Not unless Malarkey all of a sudden grew a mustache. Malarkey is later in the scene. He comes at the very end before we fade out.
You're talking about the first guy who runs up, basically.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Wait, isn't that Christensen? Isn't that Michael Fassbender?
Oh yeah, maybe. Just oh my God, yes. Yeah. With the stash, just looking, just come into the scene and look shocked.
He's the first guy who crouches down.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's who it is. And at this point, someone gives the order, get him out of here, will you? Let's go. Get out of here. Yeah, okay. And what's very interesting is I in the book, it doesn't mention anything about this this story. There's no mention of potatoes. There's no mention of Bill Keaton. This must have been information that they got from the men afterwards, during all the research that they were doing. And I sort of like the detail at the very end where you have, Doc Rowe basically taking out a pencil and, writing down who this is, type of thing. I don't know if that means that he's, keeping a diary of who it is, or if it's something that he needs to, pass on or something like that.
Yeah, obviously we already had the special on Doc Rowe, this perfunctory, like he almost mechanical look, like this is what I have to do. I'm going through it, but it seems disconnected.
Yeah, for sure. And that's how this 5-minute segment ends. So mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you wanted to add about this segment?
No, I did look up very quickly. We live in a wonderful age. I guess this guy Keen, he was killed February 10th in this village or this town, but he was killed by artillery taking a nap in a building that got hit by a shell. This makes it a little more dramatic, but the same thing, that here's a guy who got killed simply because he was taking a nap in the wrong building, just as right. Senseless.
Okay. That, unfortunately these type of things happened.
Yeah. It just shows some of the pointless loss of life that happens in combat. I mean, we can say that about daily life. The person who just happened to step off the curb as a car lost its front wheel and dies. Yeah. You're just like, things happen. But in war, it's just more frequent.
Correct. And we're going to see some more of that over the course of, the last three episodes here, the mm-hmm. last three parts. Where there will be other situations where you just say this is completely senseless and it makes no sense. It's hard to understand how certain things played out, from that perspective. All right, so today's segment is World War II movie trivia. I'm going to ask you five World War II movie trivia questions.
Okay.
So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Come on, Alan, you'll be fine.
I've heard your guests. Some of them I'm blown away, and some of them I'm like, I hope I get that same question. Do you eliminate questions once they've been asked?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Oh, you do? Oh, yeah. Crap.
Of course. Wait, you think
I've been taking notes. Oh, well, so much for that.
Okay. All right. In the movie The Bridge in the River Kwai, at the very beginning, how many men escaped the camp?
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Well, two are killed, right? There's only one?
Wait, you want me to answer the question?
Well, hold on. Oh my God.
Okay, one second. Let me rephrase the question. How many men plan an escape? Okay.
Three.
Okay, exactly.
Two get killed, so one.
That's right. One of them makes it out. Shears is the one who makes it out. Weaver gets killed, and the third prisoner We don't 100% know what his name is. It might be Baker.
Okay.
That also gets killed. So yes, the answer is three, and you are correct that Shears is the only one who makes it out alive, and that's barely also.
Yeah, because he gets shot, right?
Yes, Shears also gets shot on the way.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. See, it's not so bad. You were a little more concerned than you should be.
Well, that's a movie I've seen only once in my life,
and
it
knew
was
the
a
answer.
long time ago.
But you still knew that answer. That's pretty good.
Well, I had to have a little help from you.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Let's spin the wheel. For the
I
next
always need
one.
A little help.
Well, I hope the help is from me, not from the internet.
Are we rolling? Spinning? I can't hear it.
Okay.
I'm so used to hearing it in the show.
Yes. I hear it, but you don't hear it.
Oh, you do.
Yeah,
Okay.
I do hear it.
Okay.
I do hear it. All right. In the
Okay.
movie Saving Private Ryan, who plays the character of Wade?
The dude that was in James Cameron's Dances with Wolves in Space. Oh my god, what the heck is his name? He was one of the slow boyfriends for Phoebe in Friends.
No, it was Phoebe's brother.
Phoebe's brother. I can't remember. I know, I can see his face. I know him, but I don't know his name. Sorry. I'm gonna be mad when you say it.
Okay, his first name is Giovanni. Does that help?
Giovanni Ribisi.
There you go.
Ah, I knew it was in there. I couldn't recall it. Yeah. Wow, Avatar. Yeah, he was
okay.
Kind of a company man, Avatar. We're just going to go in and get this stuff.
He's been in all three of them.
I haven't watched the other two, but you know what? After what you told me the other day, not the other day, this was, I guess, a few months ago now, that you went to go see the third one, and you said that was even better than the second, and so I was encouraged to finally go back and maybe watch Way of Water and then The Way of Lava or whatever that third one was, Way of Fire.
Sort of. I think it's called Fire and Ash.
And I guess so. We've had one where they had an air creature. We had one now, water creature, then a fire creature. So I guess we're going to be like mud or dirt or whatever we're going to be in the next one.
I don't know. We'll have to wait like 5 years till the next one comes out to find out.
Although I will say this, you did encourage
right.
me to go watch the other two. I never had a desire after watching the first. I liked the first, but I never saw a reason to go see two and three. So I'll have to now.
Okay. All right. Cool. I'm glad that
you are an influence on me.
I'm an influencer.
I won't say positive or negative, but definitely an influence.
Okay. It's a two-way street.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right. Let's spin the wheel for your third question. Round and round and round the wheel again.
Crowd goes crazy.
Okay, and this is another movie you've seen, so I know you know the answer. All right, in the movie The Great Escape, how does McDonald Intelligence slip up and eventually get caught?
Okay, so I saw it the first time when I did it with you. That was your very first season. Good luck.
That's right.
And repeats. He says thank you.
No, he says good luck.
He says thank you in English.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's right. He speaks. He answers in English to the Nazi officer.
Not quite as shocking as like when you try to figure out what happened in Inglourious Basterds that gave them away, and that ironically talking about Michael Fassbender in that scene, which by the way for me is one of my favorite scenes in that whole movie, when they get
that
conversation and eventually how he used the wrong three fingers. I was like, oh my god, that's great.
That's QT for you. What can you expect?
Oh yeah.
All right, so let's spin the wheel for your fourth question. Round and round and round the wheel go. All right. In the movie The Dirty Dozen, Who plays the fake general that needs to inspect Colonel Breed's men?
Hold on. Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood is
No, I'm
not
thinking
in Dirty
Kelly's Heroes.
Dozen.
Hold on. That's Lee Marvin. Lee Marvin, right?
Lee Marvin's in Dirty Dozen, yes. But that's not.
So, same guy from Great Escape, Donald Sutherland, right?
Okay, well, what's funny is, yes, the answer is Donald Sutherland, but Donald Sutherland is not in The Great Escape, but he's in both The Dirty Dozen
Oh,
and
no, right.
Kelly's
It's
Heroes.
Donald Pleasance is in The Great Escape. Sorry.
That's right. Donald Pleasance is in The
My
Great Escape,
bad.
yes.
Well, just to show you how
That's
stupid I
great.
am.
That's great. You got the question right, even by, accidentally thinking that he was in The Great Escape. All right, fair enough,
That's the
fair
name
enough.
I had in my
All
head.
right, so
I had literally Donald Sutherland,
well,
but I had my head in my head. I had Donald Pleasance's face for some reason.
okay. All right, if that works, why not? All
What's with the negative waves?
right. Again,
I
that's
know Kelly's Heroes,
that's
but
okay.
I loved his
All right.
character in that oddball.
Oddball, that's right.
Hey, man.
I love the characters' names. Oddball, Crapshoot, Big Joe, Little Joe.
I'll never forget. Well, I again, this is a movie I saw with my dad, but when they put like the metal extender on the tank, it's like, yeah, it makes it look like it's a bigger gun, scares the hell out of the Germans. So funny. All right, sorry, I
That's
distract.
okay. That's okay. All right. Let's spin the wheel for your fifth and final question. Round and round and round the wheel go.
Getting dizzy. Getting jiggy with
In the 1967 movie The Night of the Generals, name at least one of the three actors who play one of the three generals.
I've never even heard of this movie, so I know I've never seen it. So I would be just taking random guesses of actors of that era.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. You mentioned one of them recently.
Donald Sutherland.
I said mentioned. You didn't. Donald Pleasance. There
Donald
you go.
Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance is one of them. Yes. The answers are Donald Pleasance, Charles Gray, and Peter O'Toole.
Oh, I've heard of him. So I heard two of the
Yes.
three. I've never seen that. What's it about?
I don't want to give away too much about it, but it's about a it's it. Let me try and think of how I can try and explain it without giving away too much about it, because it's a whodunit also,
Ah.
and it's a whodunit that takes like 30 years for someone to figure out the whodunit.
Really?
Yeah.
But it's set in World War II.
It starts off being set in World War II. Yeah. All right. I'll just read to you the IMDb blurb about it, which hopefully won't give anything away. Okay, in 1942, a Polish prostitute and a German agent is murdered in Warsaw. Suspicion falls on three generals, and Major Grau of German intelligence seeks justice, which ends up taking decades.
Ah, okay.
So it's also with Omar Sharif, Tom Courtney. It's it I saw it once years ago, and I loved it. I really need to see it again.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it.
I will tell you this, the one thing I do love about you doing this segment, every, in the three episodes that you have a new person, is I'm hearing a lot of movies I've never seen and many I've never even heard of. So it's growing a list of things that I should probably start to look for.
Are you making a list?
I have them in my head.
How does
There, there's a
that
couple you've mentioned. The one with James Garner where they try to convince him the war ended so that way he'll disclose secrets. That sounds like one I'd really like.
36 hours, I think you would love that.
Yeah.
I actually do. You should actually even see that before you see Avatar, because that one's only an hour and a half. Avatar,
Okay.
you need to block out a lot more time to sit through that one. So yeah, I do think you would really enjoy that one. That
Cool.
is
Yeah,
my opinion.
it's I've always liked James Garner in just about everything I've ever seen, whether it's an older movie or up until the end when he died. I was like, this guy's just a solid actor and fun actor to watch. So I don't know why I've never seen it.
Because there is just an infinite number of time of hours in a day.
No, there's only a finite number of hours. If it was infinite, I could watch it all the time.
I know. I'm kidding.
Yeah. All right, so we're done now, right? We're all done here, right?
Well, we're done with the trivia. Now we're going to play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie.
Another World War II movie.
Yes. So let's spin the wheel for this one. Round and around and around the wheel go.
Hopefully I've seen it. Apparently I haven't seen it a lot.
Okay, you have... let's put it this way. Whether you've seen this or not, I don't know, but I know that you've heard of it for sure.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. This is a movie from 1961.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what's your answer? And it's about a group of Allied saboteurs that have to infiltrate a Nazi-held Greek island and destroy a new weapon that the Germans have there.
Oh, is this the Guns of Navarone?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, the Guns of I've seen that, and the not a sequel, although they use the name Force 10 from Navarone. I thought it was a sequel.
It's sort of a sequel. It's connected. It's not as good, but it has Carl Weathers and Harrison Ford. That's right.
It's got Jaws. Yes, Robert Shaw. I don't mind Force 10 from Navarone, because I, as a kid, once again, I have a lot of these memories of seeing something or a movie of that kind for the first time. And when the bomb goes off and the dam is still fine, and I'm like, oh, they failed. I literally watching it going, oh my God, they failed. They thought they were going to die in the explosion, but they failed. But the British guy knew just the amount of pressure he needed to put to create the cracks that would eventually give, which bought them time to get away. I'm like, oh my God, I've never seen a movie like that. I remember as a kid just being blown away by that.
Exactly. I always remember there's a scene where they put a wire across across the road, and they end up cutting like a German's head off or something like that.
Yeah. Was it on a motorcycle or was he in the car? I can't remember,
I think he was standing up in the car, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I rewatched it within the last few years, maybe 10 years ago, something like that. And I didn't like it as much as I did as a kid, but now that we're talking about it, I probably should see it again, just to refresh my
memory. I would watch it again right now for the nostalgia of it, because it's been a long, long time since I've seen it.
Yeah.
But I do remember really enjoying that. Again, I had never seen a movie do that before with the kind of a trick ending. I thought they had failed or that they were going to die. I didn't realize there was a third option.
I guess there is.
Yeah. Sorry, spoilers for anybody who didn't see it.
All right. So, Alan, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Sure. If you want to hear my take of the news of the day, more on a national and somewhat international level, certainly based in the United States, which is where I live, you can visit The Alan Sanders Show, wherever you find your podcasts. It's a daily show. This season, because of my wife's prodding, I actually do a video version on YouTube. If you really are desperate to see what my studio looks like and every now and then watch a dog stretch in the background. But it's better on audio. I've always been an audio guy, radio guy. I do our live radio show on Saturday. I release that as a bonus as well. Somebody in this conversation, which is not me, so it must be Movie Rob, suggested I release it as part of a bonus. So I do that every week as well.
It's
so
you get the radio show.
Collaboration. If you want to just kind of see what's going on, I try to do that unless I'm on vacation or something goes really wonky. It's a daily show, so check it out. The Alan Sanders Show.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Mindy. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobmindy.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobmindy@movierob.net. So Alan's going to stick around for the weekend, and we will be back on Monday with another episode. But until then, hurry!
Hurry!